Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday. We have Stevie here and Connor is here with us today, replacing Conan, who's still on holiday. So lads, we have finally got a full weekend of three provincial finals, eight qualifiers, no hurling. So we're in the spotlight here. Football is back, lads. This is what it's all about. The big show is back.
You've been waiting for this for quite a while, I think.
Tired of being in the shadow of that hurling show.
Oh, you're getting too fond of that hurling there for a while.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I am. I'm a bandwagoner. So like, I'm going with the popular one. So we're going to do this. We don't usually do podcasts on a Wednesday, but we're going to do the two provincial finals, Munster and Leinster. And we'll run through the qualifiers as well, because we're in Letterkenny tomorrow night for a preview of the Ulster final. And that's all we'll be doing. And there's just too much on to just do that show tomorrow night. So for anyone who hasn't heard, we're in Letterkenny. We're in the Orchard Inn. Guest list is Brendan Devaney, Kevin Cassidy, Eamon McGee, Raimi Gallagher, Ushi McConville and Marty McGrath. So Ushi McConville has been added late, so we'll have a bit of crack with him, I'm sure, but maybe a bit of his MasterChef exploits might come up as well. Also, I've sent a message on Twitter to Peter Boyle. So Peter Boyle...
To turn up the goalkeeper.
The washed up ball bag goalkeeper. So I'm waiting to hear back from Peter Boyle. So hopefully Peter will do it as well, and we'll have a good bit of crack tonight. So get down there.
Peter, please do it. Please go and do it.
So tickets are selling out fast. So go online on joe.ie or sportsjoe.ie. Yeah. Connor, is that right? And you can get tickets.
You can go on either site and there's a form there to fill out. Take you 2 seconds, but it's all completely free. So yeah, head along.
So you download the tickets is important-ish to give us an idea of how many are going, but you can obviously go on the night yourself and just roll up. And if you don't pay for the tickets, it's free, so just don't feel that if you haven't downloaded the ticket that you can't go. So listen, that's that out of the way. I want to start off, Stevie, talking today about the Armagh red cards for the under 20s. And I know the manager has been very critical of it. Ushi McConville has said it's too draconian. 10 players suspended. Personally, I don't think it's over the top at all. I think they got what they deserved. You're an Armagh man. If you can separate yourself from hoping your county win an under 20 Ulster final, can you see where the GAA is coming from on this one?
Listen, we knew there was going to be some suspensions, but 10 I think is a bit extreme, you know. And you know, was there any suspensions on the throne end of things as well? I suppose the baffling thing about all of this is we don't know who the players are that suspended. You know, the Armagh under 21s don't even know who the players are who suspended.
No?
No. I was speaking to the Cleavy players who are involved.
Are you sure? Because
I'm absolutely positive. I was speaking to the Cleavy players involved last night, who are on the under 20 squad, and I've asked them, who are these 10 players? And they've said they do not know. They've been told. The players who are suspended have been told that they are not allowed to say who it is. Their appeal is up on Saturday, which is a day before their final. This is absolutely ridiculous. Why is there a suspense over who these players are?
Yeah. I mean, is that an Armagh decision not to make it public? Or, like, I mean...
As far as I know, I don't think so. No. So
I thought three of them were being called up to Croke Park for a CHC hearing first, and then there was going to be more after that.
The only two players that I've heard is Owen McDonald, and who's the son of Peter McDonald, the manager, and the captain, Ryan. I can't even think of a surname now, but that's the only two players that I know. The rest seem to be, you know...
I would have thought, because, we didn't talk about this with you, but, like, I mean, there was six subs running off the line. Yeah. Now, they sprinted in off that line like they were Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
They deserve to go. They deserve to go. And there was some of them, not all subs, some of them were lads that started and came off. So those six... I'm delighted. I don't care about you six. They inflame the whole thing and they deserve what they get. Now, I don't know what happened on the field then. And if you're involved in melee, you have to defend yourself. So I'd be more sympathetic towards the lads that were involved in the route. But those six deserved it.
I have no problem with that, though. You should never leave, you know, the subs area and go in and be involved in them, Lee. You know, you leave it to the players on the field to try to sort it out and the referee to try to sort it out. My belief and what I've heard, it wasn't at the game, was that a thrown player kicked out an Armagh player and that started the whole thing. You know, so why is all the talk about Armagh suspensions and not thrown suspensions as well?
I understand
that thrown are out of the competition and Armagh are the team that's in the final. But at the same time, you know, if this was a melee that was so malicious, you know, these thrown players should be issued with suspensions as well, and suspensions carried forward maybe for club football.
Oh, they will. No, we'll hear more about those Tyrone suspensions, I'm sure, for the under 21 next year. Maybe they will be suspended for the next under 21 game. But Armagh are in the spotlight because they're in the final, and that's why we're hearing about them. But like, I mean, it's this one in all in attitude, Connor. Like, I mean, we've all heard it. Like, I've been in dressing rooms where you're all saying one in all in. It's not helpful. Like, there's 15 on 15 on that field. There's no need. That one in all in on the field and defend your teammates, and you don't want anyone getting stranded with three fellas in a free-for-all and they could get a few clips. But the subs absolutely shouldn't ever leave the dugout to come in and make that situation worse.
You would imagine that of the 10 players involved, that the subs definitely are the ones that are going to be suspended, because I think the GAA were taking a hard line on Malise in general, that if whatever about two fellas going at it themselves, that the next man in is the one that's going to be punished. But just on that mentality in general, like, you've often heard kind of references to, I think it was a 99 call that the Lions used to have. I've heard GAA teams kind of refer to this as well. So when the Lions were playing, that if the captain let out a call in 99, that was the cue for to kind of start a melee. Do you know that kind of way? So when that mentality exists, it's hard to, like, as you said, like, nobody's going to say, no. If you see your kind of teammate left alone, it's so hard, especially if you're caught up in the emotion of the game, it's so hard to kind of, you know, prevent yourself from getting involved.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like, if the GAA want to kind of prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future, the only way, even if they're draconian, the only way to do it is by implementing punishments like this, because it's definitely going to deter teams from doing it in future, you know?
I think it does.
I have no problem with the punishments being issued out, okay, if it's on a fair basis. If this was a senior inter-county game, would there be 10 players suspended going into a provincial final? Absolutely no way. Armagh under-20s are being used as guinea pigs for this. I'm telling you.
Well, that's the thing, Stevie. Like,
we don't know that because it's hypothetical. But
there is no way.
But when would you see that, though, in a
that any provincial council or a GAA would issue 10 suspensions to a senior inter-county team going into a provincial final? Absolutely no way.
You just don't see that at senior level. I've never seen a bench empty and have a fight like that at senior level.
The only melee I can think of.
Sean Louth not have a big melee in the 90s.
Yeah. I'd say they all got suspended. I can't remember. I'm afraid to say that was a great fight, but it was a great. The boxer came in off the line. The fella from Louth, he started cleaning up house.
I think there were 6 month bans issued after the Mayo Mead in 96. But see, these were all retrospective, and they didn't have another game to come afterwards. You know what I mean? So it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
But like as you said, it's absolutely pointless. The GAA kind of handing down suspension like that, if they're not going to hand down similar suspensions if something happens in future. So that'll be the real kind of testing point to see, are they really serious?
It will. And that final, I think the manager was saying that Peter McDonald is just going to be a challenge match now, which is fair enough as well. But look, I mean, I wouldn't have a huge amount of sympathy, to be honest, if you're involved in scenes like that. But anyways, look, I can't even see where Armagh people are coming from. I can see how disappointed you would be. Do you know what I mean? But I can't see if you look at the bigger picture. You know, maybe 10 is a little bit too many, but
10 is extreme for me.
10 does have to go.
It is my own county, and there is no way am I condoning any incidents like this. It shouldn't happen. It definitely should not happen. But my point is, I don't believe that suspensions of this magnitude would be handed out if it was a senior inter-county team.
Okay, right. We'll leave that one there. Jim Gavin has been talking about Stephen Cluxton, so it's bad news for Laois. From reading Jim Gavin's comments, so he says obviously he received a bang, so he's a little bit tender, so we'll make that assessment over the coming days. He's been out with us. Stephen's a tough guy, mentally very strong, determined, and we just have to see over the coming days how he progresses. He's just sore from the bang. So then he says he leave the assessments to the medical team and the players. So he's just sore from a bang. So like, I mean, the hope Laois might have had that he's out, that's gone now anyways. There's no doubt. We talked about his importance, and I was half hoping he might have a bit of cartilage damage or something that is really sore, and he might need the injection or not and whatever. But it looks like he's tender and sore, and Jesus, Stephen Cluxton's tough enough that a tender sore rib isn't going to keep him out of Leinster final.
I can't see it. And the good thing about it is Jim Gavin is being sensible here and leaving it up to Stephen himself to decide whether he's fit enough to play or not. And Stephen should be sensible as well, and I think he will be, you know, to declare himself fit or declare himself unfit. But I would imagine, you know, he's going to be laying it out.
Yeah,
he doesn't want to give Comerford a sniff either. Like, you know, he doesn't unless he can't, you know, unless he's not physically nowhere near fit to play, he's not going to give Comerford a chance. I was just looking back there as well. If he plays every championship game this year, and if Dublin get to the All Ireland final, which there's a very high possibility they will, he'll be on 99 championship games
really?
This year as well. So all he needs is for Leash to draw, so they get a replay, so he'll get the tournament.
Someone might draw with them during the year, you know. They might have to draw their away. Or no, but sure, the Super 8s doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's
draw.
Only the provincial finals and the Ireland final.
And like, the great thing about Stephen Cluxton playing is that we can all look forward to his speech after Dublin win, because they're really exciting, aren't they? All right, Ronan McCarthy has been talking, and I think he makes a lot of sense, and we'll talk about Cork in part two. In the analysis part, but he's been talking about, and maybe we're guilty of this a little bit, but we try to avoid it as much as possible. He says, you find now, in terms of analysis and coverage of games, there's huge highs and huge lows. This is kind of the Eamon Dunphy effect. On a Monday, Arsene Wenger should be kicked out of the club. The following Monday, what a team Arsenal are, or whatever. This is just reactive stuff. Now, we try to avoid that. So he was saying, like, Cork had been written off before the Tipperary game. Then he says, after the win over Tipperary, suddenly you're now hearing that people are very positive about it, and so on. Actually, he's saying, let's keep things a little bit steady here. So, like, it is hard to avoid saying, Jesus, Cork are going brilliantly on the basis of a one-off game. Whereas, like, you want to see two or three good performances from Cork before we start thinking, you know, Cork are back.
But it was an impressive victory over a very good Tipperary team.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's where people are judging them from. But I would be a wee bit more, you know, wary of corking into a match against Kerry. You know, yes, it's a game that they can get themselves up for, but you still have the doubts about Cork at the back of it all, you know, given their recent performances at championship level.
Yeah, no, it's true. But it is hard to avoid getting carried away.
Yeah.
Like, and it's even hard, like, I've banned judging any analysis based off league form, because that's a load of nonsense. Like, I mean, Monaghan are nearly the shining example of that. Brilliant in the league, outdo themselves and flatter to deceive them, you know, a lot of the time in the championship. So, and there's loads more examples than that.
But the problem for Ronan McCarthy is that it's not him saying that isn't going to stop people, you know, overreacting to whatever happens against Kerry. If they run them close, all Cork are back. If they get hammered, well then forget about Cork, and that's the problem. He makes a really good point though.
Yeah,
I think Cork have to beat Kerry for people realistically to start taking them seriously again.
Yeah, they need, you know, they do. They need, they're a little, I think Cork might be a little bit, I don't know, again, like Clare in the hurling. I'll get hurling onto the show here, lads, even though there's not. Like, they needed to beat a big team, or else they're just in danger of just drifting away. You know, they're already a Division 2 team. And now I've mentioned Division 2 league. Jesus. Right. Ryan McManaman, Ricey, has been talking about Dublin, and he's been talking about how to get away with murder. He's been like, you might see a bit of criticism from pundits and the like about closing games out. He's talking about cynicism late in the game and throughout a game. He says, and I'm looking at Dublin, they seem to play with an edge and they seem to get away with murder. So he's saying all the top teams are cynical. So he says, we had a meeting at the start of the year, and those are the exact points the players brought up. Whether it's me or Rory talking to them, we're asking more of the players and for the thing to be player-led. So they have a meeting at the start of the year, right? And they're asking the Fermanagh players, and we've all got new managers in, and they'll do almost a questionnaire of what went wrong the year before, what can be improved on, and they just get loads of information that they won't make the same mistakes. Or, you know, they find out, and that's normal. You have little workshops with break into groups, and lots of different managers have done this with us. So they would have done this, and obviously the point coming back from the Fermanagh players is that we're not cynical enough. And it just, when I read it, it's almost like, I remember in Leash, and we slagged you last week, Stevie, about you bringing
you
in. I remember meetings with Leash saying, well, lads, let's us start going down with the knees.
Okay, it was Leash that started all of this then, was it?
No, because we're reacting to ye doing it to
no,
us.
No, so absolutely not.
So we're, okay, well, let's get over the ye thing. I mean, the point I'm making is, we talked amongst ourselves about, let's block their runs. It's being done to us. Let's get more cynical. Let's be, and like, we were like championing being more cynical. Like, and I mean, it's weird. Like, when one team does it, you realise, geez, do we have to do that? Yes, we do have to do that. And then suddenly everybody's doing it. So Fermanagh players are leading. Like, watch Fermanagh rugby tackle Donegal at the weekend.
Every team that has aspirations to be successful have to be cynical.
Yeah, it's not right though,
but,
is it?
But not every team has the players to be cynical.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And that's the thing.
And
it's either in you or it's not. And Tyrone had it. Armagh had players who were cynical. There's no denying that. Dublin have it now. Kerry have always had it throughout their years of playing Gaelic football. Maybe it's something that's lacking in Mayo, and maybe that's why they haven't got across the line.
They have a few boys.
They have
like
a few players,
Boyle
but,
and these
yeah,
lads can
but,
be.
But the out and out cynical players, you know, the players who are you know, thought of throughout the country of being
as hated. Yeah. Well, you look. I think a big point of this is Ryan McManaman didn't give a shit about his own personal reputation. He wanted to
absolutely
win for Tyrone. You know, Philly McMahon do the same. Johnny Cooper. They don't care if they're hated nationally outside their own county. Now, a lot of players are afraid of, they don't want to be that player. They want to be liked. But some lads just completely give up their own reputation for their team. And I think teams need those players.
But like, I don't know where he's coming from with Dublin getting away with murder. Right? Like the fact that Dublin had an edge, like everybody knows Dublin had an edge. I think Dublin are complimented by the fact they had an edge. Like if you go back to the game against Longford, it's not as if Johnny Cooper got away with punching your man in the face that time. And even after the All-Ireland final last year, I can't remember a longer inquest into what happened at the end of the All-Ireland final last year than when Dublin were pulling down men in the last minute. Like I know Paul Kimmage led it for the most part, but like that went on for ages afterwards. So Dublin don't get away with it.
No.
But he's absolutely right. But like is Ryan McManaman nearly trying to absolve himself of responsibility there, kind of saying that like, well, if Fermanagh are going to be seen to be doing this, it wasn't us that told them.
If anything Dublin fans would say that they're highlighted more than anybody else.
Put yourselves in Dublin's feet shoes last year in the last couple of minutes of the All-Ireland final, what would you do? You'd do the exact same. You know, if you want to win that All-Ireland, you're going to do the exact same, that's it.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. It's a rule change needed, because it's only natural for a winner and a sportsman, after putting that amount into a game, to go, he's not getting a score now. I mean, that's the reality. So the problem here is the punishment needs to be changed, or else don't blame players, because it's human nature. Like, I mean, that's just the way it is. I'll give you a chance to give out here, Stevie. On Sunday night, you settled in, nice cup of tea or nice bottle of Miller that you got out of Lidl or whatever your little routine
bottle
is.
Bottle of Miller at Lidl.
Well, you get
I wouldn't be a beer man in the house now at all.
You get 20 bottles of Miller for €20 in Lidl, whatever offer Lidl was doing.
Well, I must call in Lidl.
You don't like a beer in your house, no?
No, I'd be a wine man in the house.
A nice wine, red or white now?
White.
A white wine.
White wine.
Nice
yeah.
crispy white wine on a Sunday night. Right,
not Sunday. No. Friday night, normally.
Okay. Well, I settled in with a nice beer on Sunday night. And
from Lidl.
And I saw the Sunday game. Yes, from Lidl. And I saw the Sunday game. You settled in with your cup of tea then, and you didn't see the Sunday game because Sky messed up in some ways. Mm-hmm. This is what happened, so you were all going off your heads, and you already have a kind of complex up there that you've always kind of persecuted.
Yeah, I seen the tweets, but actually I wasn't in the house on Sunday night to watch the Sunday game, so I think there was a problem from my understanding. I'm reading the tweets, particularly from the likes of Brenton Cross and from the Irish News, you know, There was an issue with Sky.
It was the Sky viewers.
Yeah, the Sky viewers.
They were blocked from the programming on the Sky platform.
Exactly, and as we all know, and we've highlighted it on many occasions here, you know, we don't have access to the A player, RTA player in the north of Ireland, in the six counties. So you know, it's something that is raised time and time again, and something that has to be, you know, considered from RTE's point of view as well. Thomas Niblock was another, you know, I suppose, media personality who highlighted the fact as well. And it's been highlighted on numerous occasions. It should be looked into, and we should be able to gain access to the RTE player.
Yeah, so there's not much in that other than that was a mistake, and Sky have apologised for it, and that's kind of it. I was just giving you a chance to give out a little bit more about it.
Yeah,
about
but the fact that I actually didn't sit down and sound the past for the first time in the last couple of weeks.
Didn't really have
so
the
gripe. It didn't affect me as much.
Yeah, you're not as angry as I thought you might be. Right, we're getting some hurling in here, lads, because this is a beautiful story, and there's no hurling podcast this week because there's no matches at the weekend. Derek McGrath stood down, lads, and I haven't seen any kind of outpouring of emotion like this in my life. I love Derek McGrath. He's a brilliant interviewee, he's a brilliant man, and he's a brilliant manager, and he's going to be a huge, huge loss to the GAA, not just in hurling, in the GAA in general, because he's absolute a class act, and I think that's proven. Derek McGrath is the type of manager that treats players as equals, and is not this old fashioned kind of it's my way or the highway. He helps players out in their own personal lives. He's with them, he's one of the lads, but still commands that respect, and that's a rare gift as well for managers to be able to have that kind of separation, but also be one of the lads and be friend and like be a friend and a mentor to them. So he stood down at the weekend, and loads of players came out talking about that he's more than a manager, and it's all kind of stuff I would have been pretty aware of anyways, and he fought for them for the team holiday last year, and he's just helped them a lot in their own private lives. So you think Derek McGrath can't get any better. You think Derek McGrath is just, I hold him in very, very high esteem. He goes and has a house party in his house for all the players the other night.
Yeah.
So there's 52 in his house at a house party on his standing down. Like, I mean, this is just taking it to new levels, Derek. I love Derek McGrath.
Brilliant,
so
isn't it?
There was 30 players. Only three players weren't there. Philip Mahoney, Dara Fives and Tadhg DiBerca, who went to Australia on Monday and they couldn't make it. So he said it was very emotional. We're reminiscing on things. We've always said, and even if it sounds a bit corny, part of our whole ethos is to make memories, good or bad. Last night will live forever with me. Like, I mean, that's just beautiful. Isn't that just beautiful?
Yeah, and he didn't announce, actually, I don't think he announced his resignation until the Monday, because he wanted to give the day to Brick on Sunday. Because was Michael Brick Welsh retiring, or had he?
He'd
reached the milestone. Yeah, so he wanted to make it about Brick all on the day, and didn't want to make it about himself at all. And even when he's talking about the house parties, it's completely all about the players as well. It's just the mark of a man. He's just a class act.
He's certainly the type of manager that, you know, as a player, you'd love to play under him. He's only 42.
Yeah, he's
young.
Know,
so
yeah.
He's going to be around for quite a while. You know, some county, I'm sure, will snap him up, given, you know, the reputation that he's built with Waterford. But, you know, he seems to have the full dressing room on board. He has the players, you know, eating out of the palm of his hand, and he'll do anything for the players. And that's the type of manager you want to play under. You know, a real players man, and a man who respects the media as much as anything.
You know, brilliant man.
Definitely, you know, and he's had a great record with Waterford, apart from winning the All-Ireland, of course, but he was very, very close to it. So, you know, great credit has to be given to Derek McGrath.
Yeah, so congratulations, Derek, on a great 5 years, and hopefully see you return to the game soon, or maybe to the GA as a pundit. You never know your luck, Derek.
Was he there 5 years, was he? So he started
5 years.
Managing them when he was 37, you know, so he was fairly young on the inter-county scene.
He was, definitely. So he's done a great job. Right, we'll come back with some analysis and we'll look ahead to the games of the weekend.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show didn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name, on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible and unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100%
reason to remember the name. Fort Minor. All right, so the big provincial final, really, if you're taking all three into account, is Cork and Kerry. It's always a brilliant occasion. Anytime I go down to it, it's usually in Killarney, but it's in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this weekend, and it's on at 7 o'clock. So Paddy Kelly had a brilliant piece in the Irish Examiner recently. So he was at the Cork Tipperary game, and he did a brilliant analytical piece afterwards about how Cork are approaching the game this year. And I love those pieces because they give you, like, just, you don't get a sense. You'll see a few highlights on the Sunday game, you might get a soundbite off a pundit that hasn't seen the game. Well, Cork, geez, that was a surprise, and you know, Tipperary won't be happy about that, but they'll get back for the qualifiers, you know this. And I'm not blaming the pundits for that, they haven't seen the game. So it's just, so Paddy was at the game, so he gave a brilliant breakdown on how Cork are setting up. So everything Ronan McCarthy is doing, I'm 100% in agreement. Whether Ronan might worry about that a little bit or not, I don't know. So they're leaving four forwards up. Two wing forwards, Rory Dean and Kevin O'Driscoll, work back when they're not in possession, and they leave four and out attackers in the other half. So Mark Collins, Luke Connolly and Colm O'Neill, along with John O'Rourke in up front on their own, right? They're moving the ball fast. When they turn over, and this is a point we make on the podcast all the time, if you leave four up, when you turn the ball over, you don't need to always run it. You have an option of a kick. And I'm always like, why do teams only give themselves one form of attack when if they leave and someone that's on the half forward line suddenly have a second? So you could, the other team, it's easier to, it's more difficult to defend against two different modes of attack. It's just basic maths, this, right? So you've double rather than just one. So they're doing this. Now, having said that, they didn't play a full-time sweeper against Tipperary, who have a very good full forward line, as we well know. And it started, Tipperary started well. So what they did was they moved John O'Rourke back as a sweeper. So they went with three forwards then. And when John O'Rourke went back and plugged up that hole, Tipperary didn't have that obvious ball into their forward line. And then they had to run it a little bit more, and they knocked Tipperary off their stride. I'm like, isn't this lovely? Kind of, right, we'll do this. If we're leaving too much gap, we have another plan that we'll do this. And they still left three up there, which you can live with once there are two and one out in front of them. And it just seems to me that he seems to be using his head an awful lot.
Yeah, and isn't it great to see a manager on the sideline making a switch, you know, that benefits his team, you know, during the course of a game, and stops the threat of their opponents as well. The key to playing, you can play a defensive game plan, but have players up front as well. And
I think so.
You know, if you've got three players, I know if I'm a forward playing in a forward line with three players, I'm happy enough with that, because there's enough space for us. So there is to make intelligent runs, get on the ball in the knowledge that the ball is going to be kicked to you.
But you don't, the thing about you, you don't want to break past 45. Like, you're, it's wasting your time of a player of your skills to be breaking. You need someone in front of you making that hard break, so they're on it, and then suddenly the play builds up, so you're getting the next pass, which is a tastier one. Like, I mean, this is a problem a lot of teams face. They don't bridge that gap. And if you're being marked from the front, where do you run to? Well, you know what I mean? That gap is too much.
Yeah. But sideway runs, I don't think it's something that's coached enough from a centre-half forward point of view. I think, you know, intelligent centre-half forwards are making sideway runs instead of, you know, running towards the ball.
Yeah.
You know,
I would tell the fella on the 45, you're only allowed to run either side.
Yeah.
I don't want you coming down into midfield at all. You're breaking left and right, and you're an option for us, and you're an out ball for us if we need you.
And it doesn't always have to be the perfect pass.
No, you know,
the,
so
the best pass for a forward in that situation is a pass in the space so a forward can actually run onto. And while he's running onto it, he can look at his options and gauge his options in the inside line and have that move, you know, one or two strides in advance.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Cork are doing that, I would say, you know, I would applaud them for doing that. They definitely have the inside men to punish any team. Colm O'Neill on his day is as good as anybody.
He's on the bench now this time. He got injured the last one. They've picked their team. So the full forward line now is obviously Luke Connolly, who's their main man, danger man. Mark Collins and John O'Rourke is the full forward line. So Brian Hurley and Colm O'Neill are two brilliant lads to be coming in off the bench.
Paul Kerrigan as well, I think, is on
Paul
the bench
Kerrigan's
too.
Paul Kerrigan's on the bench too. And they have Kelleher, who's a big man, an option of, for a high ball. So, like, we don't want to talk them up too much, because obviously know the low base that they're coming from, although they did put in a great performance against Mayo last year.
Yeah.
Now, they're down Porter, who obviously hasn't recovered. I think he got a hamstring injury during the league, and the poor fella hasn't been
back yet.
She must have done an awful job on it. But, like, I mean, there's we've always said this about Cork. There's raw materials there for Cork to work with if they get the right system. A lot of my criticism of Cork have been they never really have been sure about what that system is.
No, absolutely. That's it. It's nice to hear somebody talk about Cork tactically in a positive sense, because for years Cork always, especially when they were strongest, they had a serious forward line to work with, but it was the system that Cork played under consecutive managers was to consistently run the ball, and the likes of Colm O'Neill, Paul Kerrigan, even Daniel Goulding were being starved of in an attack. So when you have the likes of, if they're going to play a four up like that, when you have the likes of Luke Connolly, even Mark Collins, I really like as a player as
a
well.
A great player.
I think he's
very
really underrated too. So when you have the likes of those to be able to get the ball into, and Kerry probably aren't going to line up particularly defensively, so let it in.
Yeah, let it in, and that'll work against Kerry. Like, I mean, so we will, and I think it's really good, like Stevie says, that balance between defence and attack for me is good enough, because you see a lot of teams now and they're lining up along the 45. There's often the ball over the top, like they're not playing the full time. Even Galway, all their players are around the 45, which is very hard to get through, because if you try to go one side, there'll be two or three there and they'll double up on you. But if you leave your forwards or your defenders in their positions, especially your half back line, so at least two of the three of them won't be marking anyone. So there's two extra men. Drop your two midfielders back and two more wing forwards back. How many do you need along that 45?
Exactly.
You know, so I think with four extra, plus the probably extra men you have from your half back line, because there'll be wing forwards out around midfield, that's loads. And then you have the out ball of the two on the half forward line and two in the full forward line. It's just perfect. And I'm really looking forward to see how Cork work this if they go with that again. Now, they might go with the full time sweeper against Kerry with their full forward line as dangerous as they are.
But and the formations of those four players can change as well. You can play in a straight line, you can play two on two, you can play one and
three. I don't see any of that.
You know, and you know, that's the key thing with smart, intelligent forwards. They see that they're, and they keep mixing it up, and they keep making their defender think, right, what way is this way going to line up? And even if Kerry decided to drop a player back, you know, a straight line is very hard to defend against.
Because I'll tell you why. Because if you do a straight line, right, the sweeper, being the conservative player he is, he'll always cover the inside leg because he's trying to avoid goal. So instead of having three in a full forward line be covered by a sweeper, you only have one, and the other two are out in front of the sweeper, and they're in a line, and they're breaking left and right. I don't see enough of this at inter-county level. Why are they not playing around with the lads that are left up there? Or maybe because it's usually two, and how can you play around with two, you know?
Well, you still can, you know, by making smart runs.
Yeah, you can make the runs, but there's still a big gap to bridge. That's
there
the
is, and sometimes, you know, a forward has to, I suppose, take away from his own game and try to distract a sweeper as much as possible as well if they are doubling up on sweepers. So, you know, to, I suppose, create more space and awareness for his teammates. But smart play in the forward line can always, you know, I suppose, get a way around and find a way around sweepers no matter how many players there is.
Yeah, no, I think there will. And like, if John O'Rourke went back as a sweeper and it worked well, like I was saying, against Tip, you'd imagine he'll go back against Kerry and maybe go full time because, like I said, that full forward line is absolutely lethal and they'll probably go with the three based on that. We didn't mention James Lockery's on the bench as well, so they've a really strong bench.
Yeah,
you know,
very
like
much
I mean,
so, yeah.
It is, it's a more interesting, based on Cork's performance the last day and this setup that we're talking about, it's a much more interesting Munster final than I would have said it's going to be at the start of the year.
But you, like you mentioned the narrative earlier on that Ronan McCarthy was saying that, like, oh, well, Cork were being kind of talked down before the Tipperary game and now they win by convincing win over Tip. But I remember last year, like, Cork were terrible against Kerry in the Munster final last year, but because it was Cork v Kerry before the game, Cork were being given a chance, do you know what I mean? Whereas now they're kind of being less of a chance given their league form.
Yep.
But if you weigh it up, they're probably in a better position to challenge Kerry than they actually were last year. So, no, I'm looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. Another thing which is important is their kickouts. So they have Mark White in goals now. And this is Paddy Kelly talking about Mark White. Cork kickouts on Saturday were simple. Ian Maguire and Aidan Walsh started centrally, while beyond them stood Rory Dean, Kevin O'Driscoll and Mark Collins. Right, the ball was either lumped out to the middle to contest or placed to the wings for the deep runner, which would obviously have been Rory Dean, Kevin O'Driscoll or Mark Collins, which would have been kind of on the half forward line. So again, right, here's another bit from Paddy Kelly. The beauty of these kickouts are that even when Cork lose the contest, there were at least seven or eight Cork men between the ball and their own goal. I've said this in a podcast again.
Defensively,
get
well
that bloody
up,
thing out. You look at Roscommon the other day. Look how they got so messed up by the short. When the short one goes wrong, you're screwed.
It's chaos,
you're talking about a goal scoring opportunity. If a long one goes wrong, you're still goal side. Most of you are. A lot of you are. You haven't lost your defensive shape and you can try and defend it and counterattack.
Yeah.
So I don't know why there are short kickouts unless it's just there, blatantly obvious. And again, if it's there blatantly obvious, you still have to work the ball up through the hand.
Yeah.
And by the time you get up there, the other team will probably have retreated back and you're kind of stuck with a stalemate on the other end. Like, especially when Ian Maguire and Aidan Walsh, who are both big men who can fetch.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the bloody thing out there.
But you absolutely can't go short against Kerry if they're going to push up the way they did against Clare anyway.
Aggressive.
I imagine that wasn't just a tactic for Clare. You know, I imagine that's going to be a tactic designed with the Super 8s and Croke Park in mind that they're going to push right up. So it might play, actually, Kerry's tactics might end up playing into Cork's hands anyway and forcing them to go along.
I think so. Because, like, if Kerry are pushed up that aggressively, we've seen this on lots of occasions. The biggest one, Dublin versus Donegal in 2014.
Yeah.
Like, where it's just a flick on because Dublin aggressively pushed up, and Dublin learned from that as well, because I think they had been pushing up aggressively on Monaghan
the day before
really aggressively. And we know Kerry's they're innovators when it comes to the aggressive push up. They're bringing defenders up leaving their men. So there's a great opportunity. There's another dynamic, thanks to Paddy Kelly having seen that game, that, you know, that you can discuss here.
Yeah.
Which is just fantastic. Like, I mean, this is what we want. We want more pieces like this. So, like, I mean, a word on Kerry. Like, we know what we're going to get from Kerry. Like, they're a brilliant, brilliant team, a brilliant footballing team, a scoring half forward line. Like, I mean, Micheál Burns and Stephen O'Brien won't just work. They'll get up on the other the other side as well. Like, I mean, their half forward line, the last they scored 12 points. Now, this is probably a bit unrealistic in that they're against Clare and they scored 32, which is unprecedented. Full forward line, Clifford, Geaney and James O'Donoghue is absolutely, like, the most
ridiculous.
It's the speed, the power, the
intelligence of them. It's there with
Dean Rock, Kilkenny and Mannion. Like, I mean, you know, I would have Rock, Kilkenny and Mannion just ahead because they've done it these fellas have potential to outdo that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
If it's not working, bring Kieran Donnelly, Darren O'Sullivan, Barry John Keane on. The options are just crazy.
So, like, I mean, you know, it's hard to know. The only thing, it'll be interesting to see how the Kerry defence, because the one thing I asked Eamon Fitzmaurice about after the Clare game was, there was questions asked about your defence during the league. You didn't get any kind of test today to see, have you fixed those things? And he says, there's nothing we can do about that. Like, you know, we didn't concede a goal, and it's a Division 2 team, third in Division 2. He says, I would be more positive about that maybe than saying, you know, like, but still, there are still question marks about the Kerry defence, and the question marks with Collins and Luke Connolly in there, they'll be definitely
asked. Well,
they
will be tested, sort of. Well, if Cork get the ball in, they'll be tested on, you know, we know attack-wise what Kerry have to offer. Defensively, they definitely have to tighten up, and you know, you have to take Eamon Fitzmaurice's word for it. You know, he believes that they've done well against Clare, but they're going to be tested, I suppose, at a higher level this weekend against a better attacking unit in Cork.
Yeah, okay, exactly. So we'll move on to the other provincial final, which I have a very big interest in, is that the Leinster final. We'll do predictions in part three. This is Dublin against Laois. Now, the handicap in this is 15, and we, you know, as much and all as it pains me to talk about handicaps with my own county, like, it's very easy to roll off the tongue when it's another county. Yeah. And I just, I find it so hard to discuss Laois versus the handicap, given that I want to believe Laois can trouble Dublin.
I know,
do you know what I mean? It's so hard for me to, and if I'm thinking clinically, I brought the dog across to the park this morning and met a fella, and he goes, well, Woolly, what do you think? And I says, ah, sure, look, you know, we'd be doing well to keep it inside 15. And, like, the blood drained out of his face. He says, you don't think we have a chance at all then? Like, and I was like, well, if you're being honest about it, probably not. And I was kind of walking on, and I could see how disappointed he was.
Yeah.
Do you know, because you have to dream and you have to hope. And if you're dreaming and hoping, let's just dream and hope for Laois for a minute, right? So you have Donny Kingston and you have Evan O'Carroll, who are, Donny's 6 foot five, Evan O'Carroll's about 6 foot three, maybe touching 6 foot four. I'd be very surprised if Evan O'Carroll doesn't start the next day. He came on the last day. In the last two games, he's been very good. He would be a regular starter, only he's been injured and his father passed away before the last game. He showed great kind of courage and resilience to come on that game, and he celebrated a point. That was beautiful. They are a worry for Dublin. If you can get support up for the two of these, I think Laois should lump in high ball. Like, when do you see Dublin having to defend constant high balls?
Yeah.
Now, lumping in high ball to these two is no good if we've got men behind the ball, because the Dublin half back line will just turn around and take those breaks, like they did against Mayo when they tried to use Aidan O'Shea. Never really worked, because Keane O'Sullivan hadn't a man to worry about, and he was turning around, Philly McMahon breaking it or spoiling it and just winning the breaks. And I think in that draw in All-Ireland final, the first one, Aidan O'Shea got five balls and nothing came off any of them. I was reading the stat, which was really shocking, you know. And but if Laois, like, my thoughts for Laois, right, is that they should go defensive, you know, the normal defensive game, leave three up maybe and keep it really tight for 20 minutes. Bang, when 20 minutes hits on that clock, let's use this 15 minutes. If Laois don't get goals against Dublin, they're at nothing. So they need to push up their half forward line back in position, give the Dublin half back line something to concern about, and rain those high balls in, lads. And let's hope Ross can get on the end of one, or, you know, one of the half
forward. But after 20 minutes, the damage could already be done.
Well, that's why you try to keep it tight. Last year, Kildare were gone after 10 minutes.
Yeah, but how many teams have tried to keep it tight against Dublin and they just know how to play through them?
But just on that, though, Westmeath in two Leinster finals in a row kept it to within 2 or 3 points at half time.
By playing really defensively.
Very defensively. Yeah. Now, I would say go defensively and be strong in the tackle and tenacious and work like bloody, you know, like you never worked before. And then on 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So, lads, let's go back orthodox. Because realistically, Laois need 3-4 goals here. They're wasting their time.
Well, if you look back at the National League final this year, you know, Route 1 football caused Dublin serious headaches in the Comer. Serious headaches. And if Laois can do that as well with Kingston, with the size and the powerful man that he is, and get players playing off him, the key is the players' timing coming off a player like that. There, you would expect Kingston to get his hand or some form of his body to some of those balls coming in. So, you know, there will be balls broke, and there will be balls caught by him, and Dublin will break balls away as well. So the likes of a Ross Munley playing off him and being smart about him. He's an intelligent player.
But what advice would you give Ross Munley? Because I'll tell you the problem with Ross Munley and Donny Kingston, and it happened against Westmead. We saw nothing of Leash's kicking game against Carlow because it was a waste of time. They had too many men back. But against Westmead in the first half, Kingston got three beautiful floaters, like what you would have given Ronan O'Neill. Kingston caught them. Now, Ross had broken. Like, Ross wasn't staying close to Donny because Ross is so mad for ball. He's out in front and he's actually chasing his own ball. So Ross, it didn't look to me, was told to, like, stay very close. So how did you get the balance of staying close to Ronan Clark and obviously trying to break for your own ball as well? How did you know when to do it? Was there a signal from out? Aidan O'Rourke got it, did you know it would probably go diagonally long?
Well, we knew that, you know, once the ball got to our half-back line, the likelihood was that it was coming in. You know, so we stayed close to goal. Our job in the team was to stay within 30 yards of the posts because we could, you know, inflict damage on our opponents from there. The message from Ross Munley that I'd be saying was stay as close to Kingston as possible. Yeah. You know, that's what I'd done to Clarkie. Clarkie's a big unit, so he was. And you know, he was a powerful man that he always could something through any ball coming in, any type of ball coming in. And the closer I was to him, the better chance that I had of getting onto the ball and getting opportunities to score. And ultimately, that was my job for the team. So a player like Ross Munley, who has been there for quite a while and is experienced enough, and I know he wants to get on a lot of ball. And
see,
wants
that's
to,
his game.
He wants to create as much as anything else. You know, he has to realise that for this particular game, you know, he is one of Leash's most, you know, clinical forwards and you know, deadliest forwards as well. And he can get a goal out of nothing. So getting close to Kingston, you know, depend on ball breaking away from him and take an opportunity when it comes.
Yeah. So I'd go Munley and Kingston inside, and I'd go Donny Kingston and Evan O'Carroll inside, and I'd have Paul Kingston and Ross on the half forward line, immediately doubling back to see what, you know what I mean? But you obviously have to have the other two forwards in a threatening enough position that the James McCarthy's and the Keane Sons aren't just dropping off them. And you know what I mean? You have to weigh so much up against
the other key here is, and has to be spoken about amongst the Leash squad, is once they get to a certain area of Croke Park, that ball has to be unleashed, has to be put in, and that's it. There's no time for messing around with it. It just has to be put in. And as a forward, you know and understand, right?
Yeah.
I know it's coming now. Let's be prepared for that. There's nothing worse as an inside forward making your run and checking back, making your run and checking back, and not knowing or understanding, right, when are these players going to release the ball in?
Yeah,
that was the problem. You mentioned Aidan O'Shea in the All-Ireland final in 2016. We had been playing Aidan O'Shea, I think it was 2015 actually, when Aidan O'Shea was in full forward all the time. But the problem against Dublin was that the ball was just, like, the ball that goes in has to be of a certain quality. It can't be just, because Aidan O'Shea was winning so much ball in the full forward line that time, the instinct of the Mayo half back line midfield was to jump, lumping in and let him win his own ball.
Yeah.
Problem was that Dublin had kind of clued into that. So because it was dodgy ball going in, they just parked somebody in front of him and parked somebody behind him as well. So, like, there was one to break it from behind him and one to kind of pick up the scraps. But I suppose if Leash were to have a two-man threat in there, that would kind of counteract that a little bit. But, like, I would, like, if it's going to go in, it has to be quality. And you said then to get maybe Ross Munley off the burst as soon as Evan O'Carroll or Donny Kingston grabbing in, that there could be goals for them. Because I think I remember Kildare having a little joy towards the end of the Leinster final.
Yeah, Paddy Brophy got a goal from a high ball.
Yeah.
If that's not a kind of lesson to Leash, Jesus, show the video of that. He caught a high ball. I think it could have been over Johnny Cooper and scored himself.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Now, Donny's much bigger than Paddy Brophy, and Donny's a brilliant man in the air. Now, Donny's up there with Kieran Donaghy in the air for size and everything. So he can do that. Get off him. But again, I keep stressing the fact, it's no good getting off him if you give Dublin the sweeper. Therefore, you have to play cagey, but there has to be 10-minute spells in the game where a message is going on. Lads, push up that sweeper and we rein in a few high balls. And just, is it out of the question just to think like that and, you know, to change things up mid-game and to do something different? Because, let's be honest, if Leash go defensive against Dublin, they're getting hammered. If Leash go attacking for the full game, they're getting hammered. Leash have to give Dublin something that they haven't seen before. And they've seen it with Aidan O'Shea, but they haven't seen it with two.
Yeah.
And they haven't seen it with two with an orthodox forward line. Do you know what I mean? Like, Dublin have not seen that before. So Leash just have to just go for it. I don't care if we're beaten by 20 points. Once, if we scored 2-13 against Dublin and then destroyed us, you'd be like, at least we went out there and Dublin got rattled for a while. You know what I mean? For a while. I think that's all maybe Leash can hope for here, isn't it?
I think, you know, going into the game with the mindset of trying to restrict Dublin is going to backfire. You know, you've got to, you know, go and create your own opportunities and try to win the game. Ultimately, you know, when you get to a final, you have to have the belief that you're going to win the game. Yes, it's a huge step for Leash, but they certainly have players on the pitch that can create havoc and cause headaches for Dublin. And I would like to see Leash being smart and intelligent enough for those players to do so and being given the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing about Leash, whether this is right or wrong, Laois wouldn't be afraid of Dublin. Like, Laois would have played Dublin enough times in Croke Park. Like, we beat them in 03. They beat us in 05, and this was, or they hammered us in 04. They beat us in 05 with the last kick of the game, Mossy Quinn. Laois should have won that game. Rallied brilliantly. Then in 06 they beat us. 07 they beat us in a Leinster final. We were right in it. We were actually winning just before half time, and they got two goals and they buried us. Now, they've always had the upper hand on us, but yeah, it was Laois have played them enough in Croke Park. Now, not this Laois team, but they would have gone up seeing Laois being their equal. Do you know that?
Yeah.
I think it was 2011, Justin McNulty's first year. Laois got to within 3 points of them in an All-Ireland quarter final over the course of 90 minutes.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember that.
Like, I mean, Laois won't have that problem. And I can see Laois getting really, really stuck into them. And, like, I want to dream about beating that. I don't want to even talk about the handicap. I want to think that there's a chance. I know logic is saying that there's not a chance because, like, I mean, Dublin are just so good. And, we talk about, when we talk about Dublin, we often spend more time about kind of talking about how the team can potentially beat Dublin, because there's not much more we can say about Dublin outside of how brilliant they are. Fenton is obviously adding scores to his game, which is an absolutely scary prospect. I can see Kieran Lillis is going to have to pick him up. Won't probably have the pace for him, but Lillis is clever enough as well, and if Fenton doesn't have his kind of head on him, Lillis will ghost into scoring opportunities himself. Michael Darmacaulay versus John O'Loughlin, that's going to be a brilliant brilliant battle. Like, I mean, they're two very evenly matched players in midfield, play club football in Dublin. John O won't worry about him at all. Michael Darrow won't. What, these two lads just like to attack, and like, I mean, I can see this being an old school battle. You go forward, I go forward, I won't track you, you don't track me, let's see who gets let's see who gets the most. So there are good battles. Like, I mean, Colin Begley against Conor Callaghan.
Begley's fine at this year,
but Begley's been Begley doesn't really like man marking, and he's been lucky enough in all his games so far in that the centre half forward hasn't given him trouble. As in, so Begley's a very smart player, he's very fast, he's covering great, he's getting forward, but Conor Callaghan ain't going to drop too much.
You can't give him that space.
That's the problem, you see. So Begley's got a whole other kind of
problem
on his hands. You see, Garrett Dillon will probably mark Mannion. He's a good match for him for pace. Like, I mean, you know, you'd realistically, you'd worry about Laois at the back.
You're
like,
sounding,
I mean,
more and more confident. You don't have a chat with that fellow you were talking to this morning.
I just from, like, you should have seen the reaction on his face when I just went, "Ah, well, it's versus the handicap, really." Like, he couldn't believe it, because it is. It's so hard. It's so hard to admit it. But look, that's it. Anything to add about Dublin or anything like that, lads? That's pretty much all we kind of can say about that.
We've spoke about Dublin quite enough, and we know what to expect from them.
I suppose it's who they put on Kingston and O'Carroll if O'Carroll starts. Michael Fitzsimons, you imagine, is the one, or maybe Philly McMahon has kind of wrestled with Aidan O'Shea a good bit, so maybe it could be Philly McMahon that takes up Kingston. Like, I mean, they will worry about Kingston. He's caused Dublin problems before.
I would
has
say
Ross.
Fitzsimons will be the player to start, maybe on him.
Yeah, exactly. But then you've got, right, so if Fitzsimons starts him again, you've got Philly McMahon, you've Eric Lowndes. So maybe Eric Lowndes is tailor made for Munnelly and Philly McMahon for Evan O'Carroll or something like that. So maybe Dublin aren't as susceptible in there.
What would they consider taking James McCarthy back?
I don't know. One of them are getting cleaned, could trouble. Keane O'Sullivan can do that job too. But, like, I mean, you definitely wouldn't start with James McCarthy back there, would you?
Generally, Jim Gavin won't, you know, go into this game looking to change too much about his Dublin team. They'd look to inflict their own game plan on the match and on the outcome as well. But they do have to be careful of Kingston. You have to be wary of the threat that he poses.
Yeah. So it was the game in Nolan Park, this famous game that I was giving out about. Laois scored 2-13 against Dublin that day. Now, maybe you could argue, and John O'Loughlin got sent off that day in the first half. Now, you could say Dublin took their foot off the gas.
They had a goal in the first minute.
Dublin did. Dean Rock got a goal in the first minute. But Laois got a brilliant second half goal by Stephen Attride, who won't be playing, obviously, with that injury, into the top corner, into the roof of the net, came on the burst. But Laois scored 2-13. Like, I think Dublin will be concerned about what Laois have at their disposal up front more than they would be against, you know, a lot of other teams. But, you know, whether Laois can keep them tight at the back is the question. Right, we'll be back and we'll do Paddy Power predictions.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
Okay, so Paddy Power predictions, lads. We'll start with the Munster final, Cork versus Kerry. So who are we going for this? I think it's fairly obvious we'll all be going for Kerry.
Kerry, do you have
the handicap there, Stevie? Mm-hmm. Handy, I see you have the app out. And
hang on there. The handicap betting is Cork plus 4, 10 to 11.
Cork plus 4. Hey, geez, it's weird, isn't it, that we've talked Cork up so much, but I still think Kerry might beat that.
I think they will.
I think when you look at Kerry's full forward line, it's too frightening.
Yeah, okay, so that's it. All Kerry and all Kerry to beat that as well. Another great game this weekend, lads, is Longford versus Kildare. It's in, obviously, like a Leinster Championship game, but it's two good teams that are interesting. Kildare obviously had that brilliant win, well, I wouldn't say brilliant, but very good win away to Derry, which is a difficult place to go. And I spoke with Brendan Devaney afterwards, and he did the game on RTE, and he said he couldn't believe the size of the Kildare team, that their strength and conditioning,
they're huge
men,
made to look bigger by those kind of tight white jerseys.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, and like the white jerseys always make them look flying fit and kind of slick and everything when they're playing well. But like, I mean, they've Niall Kelly in the full forward line with Daniel Flynn. Now they've the two Cribbins on the half forward line. Keith Cribbins gone up to half forward. Kildare are a good team, and they can potentially go, you know, fairly far and even get Super 8s. David Slattery was back the last day. He played really well in the Championship last year, and he hadn't been making the team. Like, I mean, he's a lively forward. It's very hard to mark. And he was playing corner forward, and he was out roaming around the field. So then, because I think Kildare, like, I mean, they actually have a very similar system to the system we just described with Cork, right? So it's a system I really like, but it hasn't been working for them, and they need to mix it up a little bit. Do you know what I mean? They need to change it a little bit. And like, I mean, they have some really good forwards. I would be leaning towards Kildare here, even though Longford proved against Dublin that they are a good team. And, you know, at home in Piers Park, like, this is a real 50-50. I'm trying to see Paddy Power odds.
Two to one for Longford. I think that's a brilliant bet.
It is a great bet.
And Longford have proved over the last 5-6 years that they are a qualifier team, and, you know, love taking the scalp of a team way better than them on paper. But you know, I think
Givney, the lad that got sent off, it is the against Dublin. He's gone. That's straight red, wasn't it?
You'd
probably expect Kildare to scrape through this game, but it's a very, very tight call, I think.
Yeah, exactly, and you're right, Longford are, I think, overpriced, although they rarely get these ones wrong. But what do you think here, Connor?
I'm going slightly just for Kildare. Like, whether they like it or not, it's kind of, Kildare have a kind of reputation, a bit of a flaky team, and like, the last thing a flaky team wants is Longford with their reputation in the qualifiers, Longford away as well. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Longford were to go through, but I'm just about giving it to Kildare.
Yeah, I'll go just about to Kildare as well. So Leitrim and Loud is the next one, and this Leitrim are 13-8, Loud are 8-11. So Leitrim given a very good chance here at home in Carrick on Shannon. I've been backing against Loud a lot ever since I backed them to beat Carlow, and then I lost faith in them, and then to beat London. I actually backed London, so I'm going to go for Leitrim for a nice famous win in Carrick on Shannon. I'm going to I'll be right, because Loud won't win the All-Ireland. It'll be right sometime that Loud.
I'm going to agree with you. I think Leitrim at 13-8 are great value for this, and Loud have only won one game this year, and, you know, it was against London.
In the qualifiers, you wonder how committed they would be. Like, maybe don't want to be too hard on them, but
after they lose their first game, you'd wonder, does the interest kind of go?
Yeah,
I actually backed,
maybe that's an unfair perception. What's in my head.
I actually backed Carlow to beat Loud in the first game. I think he both went for Loud, but I'm actually going to go for Loud this time.
You're going to go for Loud, right?
Well, so one of us is going to be right then.
Yeah. You're really mixing up. So Sligo Armagh, Stevie. Sligo are 5-2. This is in Markovic Park. Sligo are pretty formidable in Markovic Park, even though it's a nice stadium. Armagh are 2-5, so you fancy Armagh to keep the run going?
Yeah, well, I've seen Kieran coming out during the week saying that it's very much a 50-50 game. Armagh last played them down there in the National League and drew with them. They played each other this year in the National League, and Armagh are very impressive in their victory. But the last time they played in Markovic Park, it was a draw. But it was a last minute penalty conceded by Armagh that gave I suppose a share of the points to Sligo. I think Armagh are a wee bit better at this point, and will scrape through with a win.
Yeah, I think so. I think Armagh will do more than scrape through. I think they should win by 4 or 5 points.
Armagh for me as well. Sligo look very open against Galway. So
okay, so arguably the biggest qualifier is Tipperary Mayo, lads, and this is on Sky at 5 o'clock on Saturday. So we've a nice double header with Tipperary Mayo, and we have Cork and Kerry. Cork and Kerry is on RTE. So Conor, you're a Mayo correspondent. So there was a few changes. Evan Regan was back in. Keane Hanley was back into the mix. Who's Durkin corner forward? Is
James Durkin.
That's
Galway.
Paddy's brother.
Twin brother, yeah.
Yeah, twin brother. Oh yeah, he came on kind of lively, small, isn't he?
He's very lively, yeah.
Lively.
He had a couple of shots against Galway that didn't really go for him, but he was very, very... I was actually down the game in Limerick. He was really, really lively, got on a lot of ball. His shooting kind of left a little bit desired, but in terms of... It was just nice to see something different in the Mayo attack. Because James Durkin wasn't involved during the league at all. He was only kind of brought in before the championship. So he did enough to kind of give himself another chance. But Andy Moore, he came in and said Andy Moore, and I'd say Andy will start on Saturday.
Andy Moore only came on as a sub. What was the...
Well, Andy was named, but only came on with 20 minutes to go. I would imagine that Stephen Rochford thought that if there's any chance to give these lads a run in championship, now is the time, because they're probably going to beat Limerick anyway.
Okay.
But then Andy came on and scored 2 goals in about the space of 5 minutes, so kind of send him a message like, don't drop me again. So
maybe he needed that.
I think so. Yeah. We were happy to see it, because with all due respect to Limerick, Mayo kind of knew they were going to get through. So just to see something different with Keane Hanley and with James Durkin, because everybody knows kind of the 6 or 7 forwards that Mayo had before. So just to bring something different, it was nice to see.
So how did Keane Hanley play?
Quite good. Okay, I'd say. Was very busy. He got a point in the second half, but wasn't really a scoring threat besides. Now, in the first half against Limerick, actually a lot, whatever Limerick attacks actually came down his wing, whether it was his fault or not. But then Jason Doherty came on for him with about 15 minutes to go, and kind of, I think that Jason Doherty added something. And I don't know, I don't think Keane Hanley did enough to start against Tip, basically.
Okay.
But it was, he still kind of, he didn't get any game time during the league, only he's played a little bit of club football, so he'll only get better.
Yeah, I'm asking a lot of people about Hanley because I'm kind of excited about him, and I'm not getting much excitement back from Mayo people.
Expectations we were too high.
I don't think Mayo people see him. When I see him nationally without seeing him play too often, I'm thinking very good minor, recruited by Australia, top class senior player he's going to be. And I don't think Mayo people see it that way.
Not yet. He spent most of his time in Australia injured, and it's strange. For players coming back from Australia to play GAA, you expect them to be normally they're kind of bulkier, but I actually thought, and I could be wrong, but just my impression of seeing him in Limerick, that he could actually do with kind of bulking up a bit.
Really?
That he looked a bit light he's still in good shape, but looked a bit light compared to a lot of the Mayo players.
Right.
But that's it. He literally only came back February, March. He's only played a few club games, and he hasn't played because through injury and through being Australian, he actually hasn't played football in a long time. So I'm not getting carried away just yet, but I think that in time he will become very good.
Yeah.
Bit like me making a comeback with Portlaoise this year. I haven't played in 7 years, so I'm a little bit rusty.
And you still need to hit the gym a wee bit too.
Yeah, because my last 7 years has been just gym for going on holidays or whatever. So I don't associate the gym
completely
with football.
Different type of
completely
gym.
Different. It's completely separate that stuff altogether. So that's it. So the two O'Shea's were playing midfield. Lee Keegan came on as a sub. Is this Aidan O'Shea's new position now that Parsons is out?
Well, Stephen Cohen actually played midfield.
Cohen and Aidan played. That's the way they were picked.
Aidan flitted between centre forward, and he actually went in full forward for a while. He came out for the odd kick out, but he didn't spend most of his time around midfield. But whether they'll go with that again the next day, I think Lee Keegan will start. So where they start Lee Keegan, last time Mayo played Tip, they got into man mark Michael Quinlivan. Don't know, can I see that happening again? But there's a vacancy there in midfield. So Jeremy Connor is back and Lee Keegan is back. So while they're not traditional midfielders, I think it could be a thing that one of them plays there.
That's a very good call on Dermot O'Connor. I think he needs a break from wing forward.
I think so
he's
too,
out of form.
Yeah.
Midfield might suit him where he's not being maybe marked or something, not having a fella following him around. Because he's potential to be a lot better than he has been for the last year, really.
He's definitely got the legs and the size. So I'm not sure what he's like because he's not really been an option for field and kick out. So whether that'll kind of work against him. But I wouldn't say Stephen Cohen is either. And Dermot O'Connor definitely is the energy that Stephen Cohen
brings. He's better than Cohen,
and he's better in terms of Stephen Cohen got on the end of a lot of moves against Limerick, and I think he had 3 or 4 shots and only got a point, whereas Jim O'Connor will be more accurate.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see how that'll line up, but I'd certainly be in favour of him, of Jeremy starting midfield.
And all you say about Mayo, whether you like them or don't like them, they're very interesting to talk about.
They always
give you stuff to talk about. So the betting here is Tipperary are 4-1 and Mayo are 1-4. pretty skewed betting, really, considering this match is on Semple Stadium. Obviously, it's not a fortress maybe for Tipperary. They'll have nobody at it, although maybe with their hurlers out now, they might all start jumping over for some team to support.
Well, Mayo will outnumber them anyway. For them
well, you can be
that.
Sure about that. Yeah. You can be sure about that. You're crazy enough you'll outnumber anybody, really. So what are we thinking here? The handicap here is 4 points. This is a tough one. Like, I'm not reading much into that Limerick game.
No.
I think Mayo are potentially still there for the taking on the evidence of qualifiers in recent years. And, like, I give Tipperary a chance here. Sorry, Connor.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Tipperary have forwards, again, that could cause harm. Are they good enough to beat Mayo? I'm not too sure. I think Mayo will just about come out through the right end of this game, 3 or 4 points maybe in the end.
Okay, Connor.
I'm going for Mayo win, but not to beat the handicap. I think it's going to be like last year. That's they're going to struggle. If they are going to get to the Super 8, they're going to struggle over the line in a couple of games. I think this is one of them.
Yeah, me too. I think Tipperary plus four is the one to go with there. Whether you'd back them to beat Mayo or not is another thing. Right, Cavan Down, lads. So where's Cavan Down and Machiche? Yeah, 1-3 Cavan. Very, very strong favourites against Down, who are 3-1. So Cavan got the... Or this is in Brewster Park. This is in a neutral venue. Why is that?
Cavan, Breffni Park is dug up at the minute.
Okay. So I wouldn't have Cavan that... favourites, so the downward.
I would.
Fairly poor, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Down have lost more key players. I think Shane Miller might be out. Donlaher is definitely out this weekend. Haven't picked up Knox in their club games last weekend. So I would say that it's going to be a struggle for Down this weekend. And, you know, after their heavy defeat to Donegal the last day out, you know, it's going to be hard to, I suppose, pick the pieces up from that.
Yeah, me too. I'd be going for Cavan here. I wouldn't be entertaining a handicap here. I think you'd just go for a Cavan win.
Cavan for me too, yeah.
Rather be messing around with that. Okay, Waterford Monaghan. Waterford obviously did brilliant the last day, getting their first championship win since 2011, and they're playing Monaghan at home in Farher Field, and they are 11-1. Monaghan are 1-40. So you're looking at the handicap here of 12. Now, Waterford are no strangers to putting men behind the ball at home if they have to. So it's a difficult one, really, to call, lads. You know,
like Monaghan on the handicap is.
Yeah, do you think so? Monaghan struggled against Carlow's defensive system last year for a long time. So, like, I mean, 12 is a lot if you're packing defence. Do you know what I mean? Because that game will be tight for a long time. It's a hard one. I would go Waterford plus the 12. I think Waterford will keep it inside it. But again, look.
I think it could be 9, 10 points. It could be 12. I don't know. Like, it's a perfect game for Monaghan, I think, to get back after losing to Fermanagh, because I expect them to win comfortably. If they don't, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, exactly, Stevie. Yeah. You're the same, right? Yeah. So, like, I mean, the next one then is this is the last qualifier. So we've got Carlow versus Tyrone. So this is not going to be one for the purists, because we know how Carlow set up. Very, very basic defensive system where everybody retreats in front of the ball and waits for the other team to get into the 45, hopes for a turnover, and then runs the ball. So, like, I mean, it's about as basic as you're going to get. But understandably, it's basic considering the base Carlow are coming from. So, like, I mean, I wouldn't criticise these basic tactics too much once the management could admit that they're basic. But, like, that's my only issue. Tyrone have played against these basic systems a lot coming from the Ulster Championship. A lot of the systems in the Ulster Championship have moved on from this kind of basic stuff and are a little bit more kind of nuanced now, and they're not as kind of defensive. But Tyrone will have played against this. Tyrone knows what they're dealing with this, and Tyrone are very conservative, as we've seen them play against Monaghan and Donegal. When they know what they're coming up against, Tyrone are like, no problem. We'll hit you with that, and we'll see who comes out on top. So this is going to be a very low scoring game. The handicap in this one is 7, and I think I think Carlow could keep it inside the 7.
It's going to be a low scoring game from Carlow's point of view. I think Tyrone rack up a score alright.
Do you think so?
I'd be confident Tyrone rack up a score in this game. If Tyrone can restrict, you know, the amount of scoreable frees that they concede, then I actually see Carlow struggling to get it above 5 or 6 points.
Yeah, we know that, Once if they don't give away frees, and Tyrone will be well coached in that. Yeah. The only thing I'd be concerned about Tyrone is that they've tried to move away from the real defensive system, and against Meath, they played 3 up top, Matty Donnelly at the front of it, breaking first, which I really liked, and then his brother in the full forward line getting long ball, which was lovely. Now, Tyrone need to forget about that against Carlow, because that's not working against Carlow. Yeah. Like, Leash, just a waste of time having Donny Kingston and Ross in there against Leash, unless they came out and got on a hand pass around the 45. That was the only ball they were getting on. So Tyrone need to go, right, we might be trying to move it in another direction, but this isn't a game to continue this on with.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, they're still, they've got better quality players.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, and that's the key difference here. Carlo have made great strides this year. They're playing an ugly style of football, but they've made great strides, and we have to respect that.
Yeah.
But they're coming up against a team who many think, you know, are still in the top four or five teams in the country.
Yeah, and the problem with Carlo as well is that they attacked in ones and twos against Laois because they were so conservative. They were terrified about being out of position themselves. So you can't get scores attacking in ones and twos, especially against Tyrone.
Well,
so
they like
that up. You need to go with fives and sixes against Tyrone to get through there because they're really tenacious in the tackle. So I think you're right. I could see Carlo potentially not scoring from play at all, like, which is would be an incredible step. But I can genuinely see a case that because Carlo were so negative in their approach to the game, that how can they get scores the other end against a team that will set up like that, defensively?
I agree. I think Carlo will do well to put up any sort of score at all. And while Tyrone mightn't shoot the lights out, I still think they're going to beat the handicap.
Right. Okay. You're maybe changing my mind about the handicap. Anyway, handicaps are hard, anyways, lads. They're just nonsense. Tyrone are going to win that game. End of story. The last one, then, lads. We have to. Oh, we've two more. No, we won't. We're not going to do the Ulster final because we want everyone kept in suspense for the show in Letterkenny tomorrow night. So Laois Dublin left, lads. Come on, lads. Don't be cruel now. So the handicap in this one is 15. So you know what I'm going to say. Like, I mean, I'm completely letting my heart overrule my head and say Laois can get inside that 15 and Laois could potentially get inside 10 if they go about the game. If I was the Laois manager... John Subaru's Laois manager is doing a brilliant job. But look, do you get what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm just throwing some stuff out there that could potentially work and maybe it wouldn't work. And, you know, what do you think?
Dublin are going to win. It's that simple. But they're not going to win by any more than 7 or 8 points, I don't think.
I think it'll be a tough
enough game for them, yeah.
Jesus, thank you, Stevie.
You've done such a good job of convincing me. I actually think Laois are going to win. No, I think Laois will beat the handicap, but I still think it'll be double figures. I think it'll be more than 10 points.
Okay. Between 10 and 15. Look, I can live with that. If Laois beat because I need to separate again myself and say any team that beats the handicap against Dublin in Leinster, you have to see that as almost a win. Like
making strides,
Making strides. Yeah. Isn't that terrible? Let's go home and cheer a 14-point loss. Right, okay, listen, that's all we've time for. So hope I didn't leave out any qualifiers there. I don't think we did. I don't think we left out any games. We're going to be back tomorrow, obviously, in the Orchard Inn in Letterkenny, starting at 7. Brilliant lineup, as I mentioned at the top of the show. So we'll see you all there. Good luck.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.